Welcome to the podcast sessions with Retendo Nyamuda, where we chat all things podcasting. On today's episode, we chat to Professor of Practice at the American University in Cairo, founder of Podfest Cairo, President of the Broadcast Education Association, and co-president of the Association for Independence in Radio, Kim Fox, aka the Podcast Professor. So, Kim, I don't know a single podcast professor, if I'm honest. So tell me a little bit about yourself, your journey, and how did you become the podcast professor?
I became the podcast professor because that's what I teach. I've been teaching radio, audio journalism, storytelling for a long time. Wow, I'm like when? Like back in the early 2000s, I think. My background is mostly in radio. So those two just kind of converged. You know, if you're interested in doing radio, and when I got to Cairo in 2009, we didn't have a radio station. And so I'm like, well, what am I teaching the young people? What am I teaching them to do? Like, where's their audio work going to live? And so right away, we're like, well, I got to start doing the podcast thing, at least getting their audio out there. And incidentally, it did have the RSS feed. So it's just like, well, that audio still lives. And that's where all of that started out.
So Kim, you're talking about the radio side and how it meets the podcasting side in various ways, shapes, and forms. And so we're seeing more and more of those conversations pop up. What for you are some of the key similarities and some of the differences? And can the two live in some kind of a coexisting perfect space?
Oh, for sure. They can certainly live in a space together. I mean, some people are still listening to the radio in the car or in certain spaces when they have access to like a transistor radio kind of thing. Or maybe they're listening through an app. You know, the online radio still exists as an option too. So no, I definitely think they can work in tandem. Mm-hmm. I think it's best when radio people know that their radio content might be repurposed into podcast content. If you know that on the front end, they probably do things a little bit differently. I was working on a research project with some colleagues, and we learned that one of the NPR podcasts, when they repurposed the audio for the podcast, they changed the music. And they were doing a couple of other nuances. But again, they knew on the front end that we're going to make this content into a podcast. So they really kind of made it into a bit of a different audio product. And I found that really fascinating, as some people will just take that radio content, you know, maybe give it a beginning and an end and just pop it onto a podcast, you know, feed. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting. Some of the differences I think you're going to find is I had my students listening to this podcast the other day, and they were like, yeah, we really didn't like this podcast. I'm like, well, why? And they said, well, it was just too fast. It was in your face. It was just too many bells and whistles. And I'm like, well, interestingly enough, that podcast came from a radio company and it was very radio-like. And I think that's the difference. Sometimes what we like and what we want in podcast presenters is something that's not so in your face that you sometimes get in radio. So I think some of those differences are very nuanced in terms of how is the host presenter on radio or on a podcast. And I do think that with podcasting, people who, I must say, might never get a job in radio have found a home in podcasting, which I really appreciate. Because, you know, traditional radio ends up being a gatekeeper, right? Like, who are they going to let in and why? And it ends up being what we've noticed is like an old boys club. Like, who's getting into that gate? And that's why podcasting has really been an opening space for marginalized communities who have otherwise not been able to get in.
That's amazing that you talk about that aspect of gatekeeping. And one can easily look at more traditional media forms versus digital media forms, as we're seeing now, and those kinds of differences with your traditional forms. So it's your newspapers, your radios, your television. Again, we're talking about that gatekeeping. And then the digital side of things. In your opinion, what role does podcasting play in disseminating information, entertainment, and cultural discourse as a whole?
I mean, this is an interesting question that you're asking me, because the industry is changing as we speak. I just saw something on Twitter or X that was saying that the BBC has a new slate of podcasts on BBC Sounds, and nearly all of them were being hosted by people who are already famous. And so it's just like, that's not the podcasting space that I came to know and love. And I'm not trying to be like an old schooler, but I really appreciate hearing diverse voices, opinions, you know, all of that. And if we're just getting the same, it is ending up like a Hollywood where all of the same actors are getting, you know, a spot in some of these premiere movies and whatnot. So I think that's really disheartening. And I think we need to be conscious of that and figure out, well, how do we stop that train wreck from happening or continuing, I guess.
It appears that many podcast companies in some ways are chasing the numbers. They're chasing the revenue. And I myself, if I'm being completely honest, I think the reason why in part I stopped podcasting for a little bit was this kind of losing a sense of that joy and also just being a hobby. You know, if I think about how I go to the gym, I'm committed to go to the gym. I love the gym, but no one is like, you know, coming onto my platform or shouting at me or messaging me because I haven't gone to the gym. You know, it's a hobby. It's a joy. It's the thing that I started. And when it kind of took a toll and started becoming part of these conversations that I would hear so often, like, if you haven't podcasted consistently in X amount of days, you should just quit and all of these things. But again, let me put it this way. If I had maybe certain commitments in place, I think I would probably approach it differently. But I don't know. I feel like there is a balance that we need to find between, you know, all hell's going to break loose if you don't release that episode, and it being a hobby and the responsibility behind it and the commitment you're making and all of these things. So I don't know. So then it became this whole big commercialization aspect, right, of the numbers, the revenue, the getting into it, the celebrities, the people, the followers, the numbers. to a certain extent can cause a little bit of stress and burnout. And, you know, you just get to a point where you're like, actually, I'm just going to switch off the mic. But in your opinion, is there a bridge? Is there a way we can break it down, and what might that actually look like?
I mean, you mentioned that I'm the co-president of AIR, the Association for Independence in Radio, and AIR advocates for things like this. It's going to partially start with that money. And companies are showing that they have money. If you're getting big celebrities in, you have money to bring those people in. That's an assumption, but I'm probably somewhat accurate in that assumption. And AIR is certainly advocating for independent audio creators' rights and rates. Mm. So that's going to come into play to say that we are as good as the big dogs, but we don't even have a chance to make a name for ourselves. You aren't even looking our way, but we exist. So trying to give them a platform to showcase them being freelancers, to showcase their skill sets. It takes more than just AIR. I think we're just going to have to come together as this smaller community that is not commercial to say, like, what are we doing? There are pockets of us, and I know where some of these pockets are. And I just think we're just really going to have to take a hard look, because people are losing the audio jobs, and then the jobs that exist are being taken by people who have a higher profile.
And that is so true. And very interestingly enough, you talk about, and you mentioned rates, and that kind of standardization, is that something that is going to, or is there something that people can go to, a place they can go to that's like, these are the rates, this is what I can be charging? Because I think that's another conversation. People often say, what should I be charging? What should I be doing? What are the correct numbers to have to even be considered?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to pump up AIR all the way, but it is my baby, and I really enjoy working with the organization. And yes, we do have an online rate card that is available that has different rates. We're working on updating it because, you know, the industry is changing constantly. Cost of living are changing. So we're working on updating it. But right now it is out there and available. And I can share the link with you.
Absolutely amazing. But Kim, talk to me about how podcasting goes into academics or into academia. Because if I told my parents once upon a time that I wanted to be a podcaster, they would be like, wait, what? Child of the African soil, you're gonna do what? So now it's like you're a podcast professor. There is the link between academics and podcasting. You're teaching people about podcasting. How exactly did podcasting make its way into academia?
I mean, I think the same way I when I got hired to teach at AUC, I mentioned like in 2009, I believe some of this probably happened with other people as well. And if you were teaching audio, you probably maybe experienced an opportunity that said, hey, let's go ahead and do a podcast. It has a couple of threads, actually. So you could have most communication and media programs will have a radio audio course, at least one in their curriculum. Usually it's two. And those might vary. Usually it can be something from an intro audio class to an advanced audio class or something like that. And so that's what you're going to get when you're talking specifically about media programs. But there are other places on campuses that will teach podcasting or include podcasting either as a tool of listening in place of reading. So instead of reading an article, like a theoretical article, maybe you'll listen to a podcast and you'll have a discussion on that. The language programs are amazing for the audio content. So either if you're a language learner, maybe you're having conversations that are recorded, maybe you're learning from conversations that you're listening to. So the spectrum of how podcasts can be used in the classroom outside of a media program are also very diverse.
So how does one exactly go about preparing that curriculum and teaching podcasting skills? Because again, this is, I almost want to say, and I say this cautiously, you're teaching people the internet in a sense. You're teaching them digital audio production. And I don't want to say it's like social media in a sense, but it's like you come to university and you're going to study podcasting. That's why I said I'm saying this with absolute caution. I don't know. It's not a hobby. It's a hobby to some, but I guess, you know, people can be professionals in different aspects. But yeah, it's interesting. What about it being into or bringing it into this more grounded space?
It's interesting that you should say that. Years ago, we made the assumption that, you know, these young people are digital nomads. Like they've grown up with a device and they know what they're doing. And this is a very poor assumption. They often don't know what they're doing, or they use the tool in a way that's different than would be a professional way of using the tool. So invariably, students are going to learn something. I had some students, I'm teaching an online communication course. So these are about, they're probably in their second year of college. And I had them do something really basic the other day, which was, I'm like, go and interview one of your classmates and just ask them about the history of them using online communication. Like, when did they start and what kind of devices did they use, et cetera, et cetera. What was astonishing to me is many of them said they had never interviewed someone before and recorded it and did a transcript. And so, like, yeah, we're making assumptions about these young people. Like they do have a lot to learn. And I tell them, I'm like, look, you're taking this one class for what, 12 to 15 weeks. But if I've done my job right, you can get a job after this course, not after your degree, after this course. Wow. Like that is a huge takeaway. And some people will say it's training, but it's not just training. It's not just here's how this mic works. Here's how this recorder works. There is a theoretical framework that should be built into a curriculum. And courses are going to be stacked on top of, like we have an intro to audio production, an intro to podcasting course. And that's a 300 level course. So if the audio production course is a 400 or 4000 level, it should be more rigorous than the previous course. So it's like you're building as a stepping stone. So there should be a lot of thought and what we call curriculum design that goes into, well, where is this audio course going? Where else, if there's no course, where else will students learn audio in another course?
What would you say are almost the key jobs or key skills you can get after doing this course?
Certainly the ability to be the jack of all trades. If you are able to go to an employer and say, like, what do you need done? I know how to write a script. I know how to edit audio. I know how to find music. I know how to book guests. I know how to do everything that relates to audio. Like, you are employable. And it's, I say that because I did have a colleague at one time who also taught the audio course, and we taught it differently, which is very unusual. But this colleague believed that when students go into the studio, there's going to be an engineer, so I don't need to teach them engineering. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, yeah, no, I'm like, that engineer might be sick. Something yeah. might happen. Like, you should know how to troubleshoot in the studio as well. So there was a bit of a difference of opinion. And I do believe, like, yes, in Egypt, the chances of young students getting their hands on turning the knobs in the studio with an engineer is unlikely to happen. But again, if something happens and you have the skill set, then you're going to get pulled in to do the job, right?
And you've got to be prepared. You've always got to be prepared, because even yes. as most podcasters start out, you are everything. You are the producer, you're the mixer, you're the editor, you're the scripter, you're the social media manager, you are the publisher, you're right. you're doing everything. Yeah.
And those are really hireable skills when you look mm-hmm. at it. I mean, and I think we take those for granted. Yeah. And that's the problem. It's just like, yeah, everyone can't do that. Mm. Everyone can't do that. The other thing I wanted to mention is when we talked about education, I just wanted to say, you know, I was talking about the teaching and how you can teach it differently, and it can be in different disciplines, meaning audio content. But also, and maybe you're going to get to this, I wanted to talk about being a researcher. That's another part of the academic part of podcasting.
So let's touch on that element of research. So it is an absolutely crucial and fundamental part of the podcast process. So before you even think about, you know, hitting record, you're going to go through that very crucial aspect of research and the technical aspects behind researching. Do you feel that the research component is neglected, and that is something that is, there's a massive gap there?
Yeah, I mean, we can tap into both for sure. When you're working on audio content, whether it is an interview podcast or if it's a narrative nonfiction or some other kind of podcast, there should always be an element of research that goes into your project. That pre-production is what I'm thinking of. I mean, the problem is, as a listener, you'd think someone just walked into a room and started talking. And it's like, no, people take, you know, a varying amount of time before they get to the place where they're actually talking. So that research is very important. And I've been a researcher at a national public radio station. And so I'm the one who is doing the research. I know how important that is, that what I'm giving to the host, they're like, yeah, this is the real deal. And this is what I need to conduct this interview. These are the primary points. These are the highlights from the book or whatever. So mm-hmm. I think as a listener, it just comes off as very easy. And so I don't know how we convince, you know, the masses that, yeah, what you heard on the radio took, if you're producing a narrative nonfiction piece, we know how, you and I know how long it takes to produce that. But a consumer just thinks like, oh, I just heard something that, you know, it sounds good, but I didn't realize it took them a year to produce that. So I think that's part of an issue in terms of the research. Mm. But even when I'm trying to teach my students that same thing, if we have a weekly podcast that we produce, and so they have to do all this prep, and they were just like, yeah, we didn't know that we need to find the guest, research the guest, write the questions, do the show notes, do a transcript. It's just like, yeah, you've got some work to do.
So Kim, something that I really, really, really want to touch on is the ethics of podcasting. So you get podcasters, and I've heard people stating facts or coming up with ridiculous, you know, things that they say on a podcast, and none of it is fact checked. None of it is accurate. And again, this information that is information that's going to go out into the public. Are there any ramifications to that?
So there are two parts of this. The ethical dilemma is there. I guess I'll start with the first part in terms of media literacy. It really is up to the individual to scrutinize what they're listening to? Are you listening for entertainment? Does it matter to you if what they're saying is true or not true? Does that reduce their credibility or anything like that? For the podcaster, I mean, yeah, you know what you're doing. You know that maybe it's not right. If you think it's not true, perhaps you should frame it as such and still be responsible, even though you're not obligated to be responsible. If it's coming from a proper media outlet, I mean, someone's responsible. And proper media outlets probably have a legal team that can sort of, get around some of those things or just take the hit if there's a fee involved. I remember back in the day in the U.S., there was a guy on the radio named Howard Stern. And Howard Stern was just really, he was a little outlandish here and there. But he would also get fined from the FCC. But the company mm-hmm. didn't care, because the publicity that they got from his outrageousness trumped the fees that they were getting from the government.
I see what you mean. And it's going to be very interesting to see, especially as more and more associations pop up, even the ones that you're part of, how that might look like in a couple of years. So still touching on the subject of podcast ethics, and it is the hot topic at the moment, which is the concept of podcasting and AI. So I'm really, really, really intrigued by it as a whole. I use it for certain reasons. I use it as an assistant sometimes to research, to come up with ideas. I think it's very fascinating even when it comes to production. What are the ethical conversations or considerations from an academic podcast perspective around podcasting and AI?
It's going to fall in line with journalistic ethics in terms of disclosure. Like, you should be disclosing that you did what? What did you use? What was the outcome? I mean, even in the classroom, I've allowed students to use AI voices. Mm-hmm. And the outcome was interesting. Because the students were pretty frustrated that they couldn't get the AI tool to sound the way they wanted it to sound. These tools still have a long way to go, but they are catching up pretty fast. And I just think it's up to the people who are behind it to say, I mean, I think if you're using it to ideate, like coming up with, names for podcast episodes, I don't feel like I need to disclose that because, chances are I'm taking something, I'm probably making it my own in a different way. But I think that if you're using the voices, you should be saying that you're using a voice in some kind of way.
So essentially what you're saying is using it to ideate, using it to generate ideas or edit or to pull clips, more so than when it comes to representation. So I, Retendo, I'm sitting here. I'm not AI. I'm not a bot. This is my voice. This is me saying, I'm interviewing Kim. But then there's Kim popping up saying, like, I never jumped on an interview with Retendo. I don't know who that is. Very interesting.
And it would be the same if, someone's going to then say, okay, we're going to take Kim, this podcast, and we're going to make it Spanish. There should be disclosure about that.
And I'm seeing that more and more in the news space, where they're just like, okay, cool, you have your voice or this conversation, but now it's in like 20 other different languages.
Yeah, it's a blessing and a curse, right? It's just like, well, I want to know that that's being done. And I also want to know if it's being monetized, because, I kind of didn't sign up for that. And if people are making money, I would like to be in that line as well.
So Kim, as the podcast professor, what are some of the interesting stories that have come out from your class and from your students?
You know, what I like about my students' work is there's always a unique angle, at least the ones that really resonate. And in the topics, and that we don't get these stories from this part of the world. I must admit, I just think, like, especially the ones that win awards. And then sometimes I hear from the judges and they're just like, the story was fascinating. I've never heard anything like it before. I teach at a private university, and my students, I mean, everyone kind of knows that they are a little bit privileged in this country. So that means that they come from privileged families. Those privileged families usually have some connection to some kind of history somehow, somewhere. Either their parent is the owner of some long-standing company, or their parent or grandparent was a high-ranking government official. The stories are just really, really deep and interesting and compelling. And so those my students have access to these people. I'm just like, are you kidding? I don't know if you know this. There's a really famous singer named Uma Kathoom. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can Google her. She's really, 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 really famous. Some people call her the Aretha Franklin of Egypt. Like she's like a powerhouse. Yeah. One of my students, his grandfather was her conductor. And he's got access to all of this information. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating, the piece that he mm-hmm. did. I could go on and on about some of the stories that they've done, but they get mm-hmm. really creative. And what I like about working with my students is I feel like the key word there, working with, I am coaching. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what story are you trying to tell? Mm-hmm. Like, how can I help you tell that story? I have one more example that I like to give, and I'm just like, this is a very special one. I had a student, because they get to choose whatever they want. I'm like, usually, sometimes we have a theme, and sometimes mm-hmm. we don't. I don't think we had the theme this particular year. And one of my students, Basant Samut, came in to my office, like at 9 o'clock in the morning. She's like, I have an idea for my final project. She said, I want to interview my parents about sex education. About how they learned about sex education. Exactly. So I tried to keep it together like, oh, well, let's talk about that a little bit more. My point here is I wasn't willing to be like, yeah, no, we're not talking about that taboo topic. How can we talk about this topic? What makes you interested in this? So we're starting to dig into that and that her parents were down for it. So I'm just like, yeah. Well, there's no reason to say no to this story. Mm. So yeah, we did the story. She went on to win some awards. And another part of the pedagogy that I use in the classroom is we do oral histories. So you're mm-hmm. not just interviewing to get a sound bite from the interview. We're taking our oral histories and donating them to the university's archive. So mm-hmm. it's a longer interview that might be 30, 40, 50 minutes long. Mm-hmm. So for us, you know, Basant had these long interviews with her parents and she also interviewed them together. And it was a really good piece. But I'm thinking about family history here because sadly for us, Basant's mom passed away during mm-hmm. COVID. Mm-hmm. But she values having that interview. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like she has that piece and she has this long interview and she went on to win some awards for it. So in the end, it just has a lot of meaning to tell these really unique stories.
That's amazing. I'm absolutely blown away by that. And I think at the end of the day, this is the beauty of what podcasting and audio is. It's embedded in our African heritage, you know, storytelling. The history of Africa is audio storytelling. Kim, in your opinion, what does the future of podcasting look like? I know it's changing all the time. I know that it has moved. Research is coming in. AI is coming in. But as Dr. Professor Kim Fox, what does that future look like for us?
I think it's going to look like what we want it to look like. I mean, we talked at the beginning about how do we get our industry back? Because corporate has it and it's doing things with it that we don't like. AI is coming and it's doing things that are making us uncomfortable. So the question really becomes, what do we want our future to be like? You know, I was just working on something where people were talking about doing transcripts. And on the one hand, we're saying like, yeah, you can do a transcript through AI. And they were like, yeah, but if a human does it, maybe the accuracy is better. Not maybe. It's like, yeah, it just depends. But I think some people still want humans to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so that part of podcasting is not necessarily going to be eroded, at least not mm-hmm. in the same way. I mean, from a radio background, we know that there's, you know, voice tracking. So it might seem like I'm in the studio, but I recorded that, 2 days ago, an hour ago or something like that. So technology does have some benefits for sure. But in the end, you're going to probably have a human being involved in some way. So I don't, my future forecast is that I don't see a total erosion of jobs in our field. I feel like the storytelling that I just told you about is just very unique. You only get those stories by talking to someone, and AI can't do that. So those jobs And those stories are not gonna, you know, not be there. We just need to get out there and talk to people and get those stories out there. I think our bigger concern is how do we pay people a decent wage for doing those kinds of stories? That's our bigger concern. And how do we convince some of these big companies that it's their responsibility to make sure that some of the little people get recognized and get paid as well?
So Kim, one thing I'm really interested and intrigued by is the equipment, the tools, the resources, the editing, the software, everything that people use when it comes to their podcast production. So please share your podcast production ins and outs with us.
I mean, is this like a dream question or what I have?
Let's go with both. Let's do what you have and then let's do dream.
All right. I actually have my equipment right here. Let me grab it right quick.
Cool.
Ooh.
Oh, lovely. So,
well, yeah, it's just a little something. It's a Zoom.
Nice.
H4N Pro. I've been working on a secret project, but it's obviously an audio project. It was a big project. And so I had to do some recording at home, actually. So I had to create a space where I could record at home and pulled out my equipment and whatnot. So this is my basic kit where I have a Zoom H4N, but in that kit, I also have a Zoom H1, which is the smaller one.
Mm.
And that's really nice to just, you know, get me going. It's in a really small bag. If I'm carrying a camera, I have a bigger bag. If I need external microphones, that bigger bag handles all of that stuff.
Nice.
So that's what I currently have. And I also have access to a studio on campus if I need that. But campus is not close to where I live, which is why I didn't use the studio for the project that I recently worked on. Now, in a dream world, yeah, I'm like, yeah, because are you the kind of person where whenever I see a new mic, I'm like, oh, I need to buy that. I need to buy this new Rode, you know, Roadster or whatever. And all
no,
these things
I look at the cost and I'm like, oh, not today or tomorrow.
Yeah. So no, I kind of like, I mean, when I think about a setup, I do want to have a bit of a board,
okay,
like a small audio board. I want to have something like that. And I mean, I don't know what kind of audio recorder I like the best. I'm not a fan of the one that I have because it picks up the handling noise in a way that's really annoying. I had a Roland. I love my Roland. I had lost it and it's back. I found it. I'm like, ooh, I love you. Thank you for coming back to me. So that's one of my favorites, but because I don't think they make this particular Roland that I have, they don't make it anymore. So I like that. For audio editing, I'm currently using Adobe Audition, and it is out of habit. I have been using Adobe Audition since it was called Cool Edit Pro, which was a gazillion years ago, and I really don't know how to move away from that. Yeah. I've been wanting to move to Hindenburg because I absolutely love the work that they do, and so I've been meaning to really jump in there and do it. And I've also been meaning to use GarageBand because, you know, it's the thing that's right on this Mac that I never use.
Yeah,
it's the forgotten Apple product. So that's for audio editing. I mean, speaking of Adobe, that Adobe podcast tool is pretty cool. I have used it a little bit. I've used Auphonic on the back end. I use plugins from Isotope. Isotope has some amazing plugins that are one click for cleanup. I love those.
Nice.
I love the music from Blue Dot Sessions. So sometimes I'll go in and buy some of the music because you get the stems, and with the stems, you can even make totally new music. There's another product I use to do some really unique and funky kind of music with. It's called Citizen DJ, and it's from the U.S. Library of Congress. You got to go to that one and play around. It's absolutely really, really fun. And I use it in some different and unique ways.
And so, Kim, how can people connect with you? How can they reach you or email you or reach you on social media? Please definitely share your contact details.
I mean, I am still on that crazy place called Twitter X. I'm out there. I'm checking it every day, at least twice a day. Sometimes I'm on Facebook, but not as much. Some people who can find me on WhatsApp, I'm checking WhatsApp a lot. I'm just looking for, good folks. Actually, there's a group on WhatsApp called Develop AI, and he's doing a lot of stuff. Paul McNally out of South Africa, he's doing a lot of stuff with AI audio. So I like being in that space again to try to keep up with the field, what's going on. We have a pod academics group for the podcast scholars. We call the area podcast studies. So we have a group where we work on sharing ideas and resources. So I'm in these social spaces. Of course, I'm on Instagram. I have my handle there. It's called O Radio Girl. And yeah, I think that covers most of them. Interestingly enough, and I won't say what my handle is on Snapchat, but I'm there too.
Don't worry, we'll find you. We'll find
No, it's O Radio Girl, but I tell people because I use Snapchat almost daily, but I don't use Instagram or any of the others like this. So I'm like, Snapchat is where I put everything unfiltered, and then I go and put it on the other. So if you find me on Snapchat, you'll be like, ooh, she is where and she's doing what? Because she didn't post that in these other places.
This is the real Kim Fox.
It's the real. So, and it's interesting because not a lot of people follow me there, and I think it's fine. I'm like, yeah, this is just between us, okay?
And that's a wrap on today's show. Don't forget to download the latest issue of the Podcast Sessions digital magazine at www.thepodsessions.com.